The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week I began a conversation about reactivity, what it is, and how our mindfulness practice can help us with this challenge in our lives. And last week I talked a little bit about kind of how reactivity is formed, you know, how it happens in our minds. And today what I'd like to really explore is the side about how we work with it, how we actually practice, and how that helps us with this difficult state. And so, you know, we have reactivity to so many things. You know, we'll react to physical pain. We get afraid or confused or frightened or angry with physical pain, or irritated or annoyed. So many different mind states. We have reactivity to situations, to people, to sounds. How many times when you're meditating do you react to the sound of a motorcycle going by, or you know, something happening around you in your environment? We get reactive on the freeway when people cut us off. We get angry or frustrated. We get angry with our partners. We get angry with people at work. We get reactive to news that we read. So many different ways that we react. We react when things are unpleasant sometimes, in that we want to push things away, get rid of them. We react when things are pleasant, in that we want to hold on to them and keep them. If we manage to hold on to them and keep them, we may react by being afraid that they'll go away. We react when it feels like situations are out of our control. We get frustrated and confused when things are out of our control. Why me? Why me? Why is this happening to me? We have judgment about ourselves, judgment about others, as a form of reactivity. So perhaps you're getting the idea or the recognition of yourself in this, that so many forms of what we could call afflictive emotion, difficult emotions, are forms of reactivity. It often, I think, feels when we have a reaction, something happens in our environment and we react, it sometimes feels like we don't have much choice in that reaction. It's as if the situation is pushing some button, and that's what I do when that button gets pushed. So it feels very much at times like the reactivity that happens with us is not under our conscious control. And to some extent, that's often the case, because so much of our reactivity is born kind of below the horizon of our subconscious, that there are old patterns and conditioning, that events that happen in our lives are kind of tapping into somehow. They're reminding us, perhaps, of situations from our childhood at a subconscious level. And at that subconscious level, memories are produced, and then we react to those memories with emotions or confusion or fear. So very often our reactions are born below the level of our conscious awareness. And so we think it's out of our control, not possible to change or do anything about. But fortunately, actually, the practice of awareness, of mindfulness, begins to kind of infiltrate the horizon of the subconscious and begins to help us through this process of watching, witnessing our reactivity, it begins to allow us to start to see some of those things that were seemingly in our impenetrable unconscious. One of the great discoveries for me with my mindfulness practice is the sense that the more that I practice mindfulness, the more that I'm aware of my mind and body, of everything that goes on in my heart and mind and body, it's as if the horizon of the subconscious gets lower and lower, so that the awareness, the mindfulness, can see more and more of how these reactions are created and formed. And seeing that, as the mindfulness sees that, as the mindfulness actually sees how those things are constructed, it begins to mind, the mind begins to understand itself, our internal mechanisms, actually, as we could say, the internal mechanisms of mind and body begin to understand how to alter those habitual reactions. It's a great thing, this mindfulness, in helping us to release, kind of reprogram ourselves. It's not, it doesn't necessarily happen in the way that we'd like it, where we, for instance, what we'd perhaps like is being able to see our reactivity and choose to flip a switch and say, don't do that anymore. It doesn't quite work that way. But what does seem to happen is that the more the this kind of an open, non-judgmental awareness, which is a definition perhaps of mindfulness practice, of a form of mindfulness practice, an open, non-judgmental awareness meeting difficulty begins to allow the mind itself, the processes of body and mind, to understand how to move more towards well-being. When those processes are below the level of our conscious awareness, there's not much hope for that kind of reprogramming to happen. But when it comes into consciousness, it's kind of like dirt coming out into soapy water in the wash. You know, that we start to see these things happening, and the mindfulness allows the dirt to be washed away. It allows the reactivity to begin to be released. And so this is our practice, is part of our practice with reactivity, to begin to be interested in exploring it, begin to be interested in understanding it. The Buddha taught in the First Noble Truth, suffering should be understood. And we can think of reactivity as a form of suffering. It often is an experience of suffering when we're reacting. We may actually not notice that. I know that in my early days of practice, anger was something that happened for me a lot. I had a very angry personality. And as I began noticing the anger in my mindfulness practice, I recognized actually that I was really deluded about my anger. You know, I had no idea. It was like a revelation to me that when I was angry, it felt horrible. I had the idea somehow that my anger was doing horrible things, making the people around me feel horrible, but I had no idea it was making me feel horrible. That was a revelation, and actually that's part of how this process unfolds. When our minds and bodies sees how horrible it makes us feel, it's like, oh, that's not well-being. So the mind, thank goodness, actually wants to go towards well-being. And so as it sees how our own mental processes are contributing to our lack of well-being, it starts to let them go. It starts to let those things go. So one of the things that we begin to actually appreciate and be happy about is when we see reactivity with awareness. It's like, oh, good. At least it's known. At least I'm aware that it's suffering. I'm aware that it's creating this lack of well-being, and that then the mind can start to find its way towards well-being. Without knowing its suffering, it won't find its way. So this is part of our exploration. How do we meet? How do we have the interest in meeting these difficult states of mind? So often with reactivity, our initial response is, so that we're reacting to something, we're reacting to a situation on the freeway, somebody cuts us off or something, and what's our initial response? Well, we have different responses to that. Some of us might get frightened, some of us might get angry, and it might be that we think we're justified in our anger, and that kind of encourages us to be more angry in a way. And so we often will react to our reactions, like something feels out of control, so we're frustrated, and so we try to do something to fix it or change it, thinking that the problem is out there. Now, I have to say, because I always have to say this when I come to this point in a talk like this, that this exploration that I'm talking about here, the exploration in terms of turning towards reactivity, that's essentially the topic of the talk in a way, turning towards reactivity, is an exploration for us to begin to understand how our minds put together this reactivity, so not so that we can just sit back and let things happen around us and not respond, but such that we can be more wise about how we respond. Typically, when we're in a reactive mode, our actions come out of that reactivity. And how often have we, said something out of anger and then thought, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Out of reactivity, we say something or do something that we wish we could take back. And so the turning towards our reactivity gives us a little bit of a space in which to see, how do I want to respond here? Maybe rather than yelling, maybe I could take a breath and then say something in a more measured tone. So that it doesn't mean not responding. What I'm talking about here doesn't mean not responding. The hope is, and the encouragement, and what does seem to happen over time is that the more we are able to meet our reactivity, to turn towards it and witness it, the more we can begin to find our way to a skillful response in the world, a skillful action, rather than a reactive action, one that has a sense of perhaps some kindness and some compassion to it, rather than anger, hostility, or confusion. So understanding dukkha, understanding our reactivity, this is a kind of a middle way, in a sense. I think some of you may know that one of the terms for what the Buddha taught was the middle path. And this is one way in which we can explore or think about the middle path, that in terms of looking at, exploring our reactivity, we, instead of either suppressing reactivity, which might be what you would think is being encouraged, it's like, well, don't react, don't act on reactivity, that means I should suppress it. That's not the encouragement. So not suppressing, neither suppressing nor expressing, neither suppressing or acting out on. So what does that leave? What's in the middle there? It's a turning towards. What's in the middle could be a turning towards and actually allowing the experience of reactivity to be known in that mindful awareness. So that it is not repressed, it is consciously in experience, and yet not necessarily expressed either, at least not expressed from that reactive perspective. As we explore our reactions, another piece of that, the shift from reactivity, acting out of reactivity to acting out of wisdom, is that in our mindful exploration of reactivity, we start to see perhaps that there's some kind of automatic knee-jerk kind of reacting going on. And there's some of it that's actually, you know, connected to truth. Some of it is, yes, this is not just. This should not be happening. This is not a good thing in the world for this to be happening. Some action should be taken. But rather than it being a knee-jerk reaction out of hatred, it could be a response out of compassion. And so when we witness our reactivity with mindfulness, we begin to tease apart what's the reactivity from what's the wisdom. What's the truth? What would be helpful? And so this exploration, turning towards and being willing to experience, allow that reactivity to come into our mindful awareness, begins to help us to make those distinctions. So this turning towards, this understanding of our reactivity is not an intellectual understanding. That word understanding often conjures up the notion of figuring something out with our minds. But this is more of an understanding through experience that the teaching is pointing towards. So I'd like to explore several ways to do this turning towards. How do we meet reactivity? One of the first ways is just to begin to recognize it. Acknowledge it. Know it. Know that it's happening. So many different flavors. Some are kind of born out of an aversive quality of not liking things and wanting to push them away. Some are born out of a kind of a quality of wanting to hold on to things. And some are born out of a kind of a confused quality of mind. So I'm going to read a few here. For me, this was actually helpful to hear a whole list of different kinds of reactivity. And this is by no means exhaustive. So some of those that come out of that aversive, reactive, not liking flavor. Fear, anger, bitterness, resentment, hostility, dislike, rage, irritation, annoyance, worry, hatred, distrust, cruelty, discontent, frustration, dissatisfaction. So you see a range. Some of them are kind of subtle, like discontent or irritation, and others are really strong, like rage, hostility. And then those in the kind of the wanting to hold on to, stinginess, covetousness, excitement, insistence, exaggeration, pride. And in the area of confusion or delusion, dullness, boredom, disconnection, uncertainty, restlessness. So there's a whole range of reaction. Restlessness, for instance, is a pretty subtle kind of reaction. You know, something happens, it's just like, I don't want to get me out of here. You know, it can be very subtle, or it can be really, you know, can't stand this. So there can be a real range of reactivity. So recognizing what's happening, just actually the simple recognition. Confusion is happening right now. Anger is happening right now. Fear is happening right now. That simple recognition is the beginning of turning towards. And that simple recognition is really powerful. In my own practice, I've seen just that much of practice have huge transforming effects on my mind. I used this around anger for the first 3 or 4 months of my practice before I understood much about how to be more fully mindful of my emotions and my reactions. I could know that I was angry. It was like, there's anger. Yes, I know that I'm angry. And I had read this book that talked about being aware of your reactivity. It's like, well, what do I do with this? I have no idea. I guess I go back to work. And in retrospect, I can see that just the simple acknowledgement, oh, anger is happening, is what gave me the space to even be allow me to go back to work. And that exploration around just recognizing, oh, anger's happening. That was how I worked with my anger for the first few months of my practice in my daily life. And it was very transformative. It gave me so much space and ease in my life. So even that very simple thing, just recognize it. Very powerful. Then we can actually kind of explore the texture of the inner feeling of the reaction. This may be familiar to some of you and not to others, but there's a way in which, you know, these difficult reactions often come with different components. So there's probably some thinking going on, some ideas about a situation or what people did or what they should have done or shouldn't have done or what I should have done and what I should tell them the next time I see them. All of these thoughts churning. That is one of the cycles that actually fuels the reactivity. And so one of the key tools in our toolkit is to see if we can, rather than staying engaged with the thoughts, let the thoughts go if possible. Sometimes it's hard to stop them. We can't stop them, but we can at least set them aside sometimes and instead turn our attention towards our body. How is that? That's another place where the reaction is often experienced. So there's the thought component of reactions, and there's often a component in the body which is related to an emotion. Usually often related to an emotion. These reactions I mentioned earlier, many of them will have some impact on the body. The whole nervous system in this part of our body is designed to produce sensations with emotions. And so there are physical experiences that go along with reactions very often. So one of our main tools is seeing if we can let go of the thoughts, which if allowed to continue, just kind of reinforce the cycle of the emotion and like keep it going. It's like a squirrel in a squirrel cage or a hamster on a hamster wheel, you know, just keeps itself going. If we can let go of the thought and turn toward the body, it really supports, the turning towards the body helps us to let go of the thought. And it keeps us in contact with the reaction. You know, sometimes I think the reaction is putting out thoughts because it's almost as if the reaction's saying, we got to do something, pay attention to me. And the way it's trying to get our attention is by creating all these thoughts. And then we think about it and try to figure out what to do and what we should say and what we should do to have them stop doing that or whatever. So we get into that world of our thoughts. So if we can let go of the thoughts and instead of that meet the reactivity itself, sometimes the reactivity goes, oh, thank you. You know, I've been asking for attention. It's kind of like a kid sometimes, you know, screaming, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. And, you know, you turn and pay attention. And finally, it's like the kid would go, oh, she's paying attention to me now. That kind of thing can happen when we turn towards our reactivity. It's like, this is what I've been asking for, to be paid attention to. So it can give a little bit of space around the reactivity to turn towards the body, what's happening in the body around it. Sometimes the body sensations are unpleasant with some of these difficult states. And so it can take some courage to meet these experiences. And I'll talk in a little bit about how to work with it if it's really difficult. But what I'd like to do right now is to give you a little taste of what this means, to turn towards the experience in the body, to turn towards a reaction. And so, well, let's just start with settling in for just a minute or so into a meditative kind of space. Just connecting with a few breaths. Allowing the body to be relaxed. And knowing the in-breath and knowing the out-breath. And so allow yourself to call up a recent situation in which there was some challenge for you. It doesn't have to be a major one, but just some challenge that happened in the last 3 or 4 days, say. And let yourself remember the situation and who you were with and what was happening. Often this will call up some kind of response in the body or mind. And so allow yourself to recognize what is the response, what is the reaction happening when this situation is called up. Can you recognize the reaction or emotion? Is there frustration, confusion, anger, worry? Insistence, self-righteousness. Let yourself acknowledge that this is happening. This reaction, it's happening right now. That's just noticing that. And letting go of thoughts as much as possible. Just check in and see if there's any experience in the body that might correspond to that emotion or reaction. I recently heard a beautiful analogy for how you can perhaps think about this turning inwards into the body. You could almost think of how you can tune in when you're hearing a song, not to the lyrics or the melody, but to the baseline, the inner reverberation of an emotion. There may be tightness, fluttering, aching, pressure, contraction. Sometimes there are many layers and flavors. It may not be possible to identify a single experience. And that's okay. It could just be chaos or confusion. And then seeing if there can be a connection in the experience. How is that reverberate through the body? And as much as possible at this point, seeing if you could take a breath as if the breath is a cleaning, cooling energy, and see if you can release any reverberations. And now to also encourage a kind of a releasing. If it's possible, call up a time recently when there was a sense of ease or happiness in your life. And noticing what are the emotional resonances with that memory. And how are those felt? How do those reverberate in the body? And when you're ready, taking a few breaths and opening your eyes. So just a couple of people who might be willing to say a little bit about what you noticed. Were you able to connect with the body and the sense of how the reaction and emotion was felt in the body? Was that possible for any of you? Were you able to touch into that?
I have been experimenting with what you're talking about the last couple of days, and I feel very disconnected from my body.
Uh-huh.
I am one of these people who have lived in their mind very much so. So, and I just started meditating just maybe about a month ago, a month and a half ago. So it's all new. And it's very subtle. Okay, mm-hmm. I've come into just some very subtle things. Sadness is almost a constricting of...
In the throat?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was big for me when I even got that, because I had never noticed that before. And I'm a shallow breather. I am such a shallow breather. I almost don't breathe. And I have not connected that necessarily to an emotion yet. But uh-huh. It's
so you're beginning to recognize that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
So unless I'm actually concentrating on breathing, I am a very shallow breather.
Well, it's actually okay to be a shallow breather.
Oh.
It's actually fine.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. We get this idea, especially being here in California. It's like, you know, relaxed breath, that means...
That's not happening.
That's a relaxed breath. We have that idea,
yeah.
But breaths are so different. Actually, I find the more and more settled my mind gets, the more short and shallow the breath gets. So there's not necessarily a connection between a tense or agitated mind and a shallow breath. It might be that there's a connection, but don't just assume that they're connected.
Okay.
And so the, you know, what you're noticing, I mean, first of all, that you're noticing, wow, I'm kind of out of touch with my body. That was a big aha for me as well. I mean, like I said, you know, I had no idea I was suffering. You know, it's like anger, an unpleasant experience, huh? You know, it was a huge revelation when I saw that. And it took quite a while for me to begin to come into what is this inner landscape of the body. So it can be, it can take some time and just continue the exploration, just keep the patient, it's kind of patient exploration of it. And for you, you were noticing, you could be aware of what the emotion was. You knew it was sadness, for instance. And so starting there, I mean, that was huge for me for the first months of my practice, just recognize, yes, anger is happening, to just even frame it that way. So sadness is happening. That you know sadness is happening, and then to just rest kind of in your experience as, okay, this is what's happening, and what can I know? What can I know? And not to try to have to push in to figure it out or find it, but just kind of be willing to be with yourself with sadness. And slowly over time, at least in my experience, slowly over time, that will begin to, the awareness begins to penetrate the inner landscape.
One more thing, because I've just, it's almost like I'm just cracking the surface on this, but I almost feel like I live in suffering
mm-hmm.
all the time. And then there's these moments of joy or anger or whatever because of my posture.
Mm.
It's almost like a concave thing that I work on diligently. But I almost feel like I'm in suffering all of the time.
Well, they're probably a great deal of the time. And one of the interesting explorations is to begin to see when, like, we have our own habitual reactions to things. You know, we all have our own kind of favorite reactivities, and. You know, for you, partly, it sounds like there's this contracting in the body that I don't know if it's a bracing or a protecting or, you know, something that's maybe a kind of a habitual thing that has been with you for a while, that is there perhaps quite a lot of the time, but there are times when it goes away. And one of the great instructions around this exploration of particularly habitual forms of reactivity is notice when it's there, okay, yep, sadness is happening or protecting is happening or whatever it is, and then notice when it's not there. So notice when it's there and notice when it's not there. And that begins to break through that idea that it's always there. But one of the things we do see as we begin to pay attention is just how much our minds do, out of habit, go into these habitual reactions and kind of run those loops over and over again. But the good news is that with the awareness, as I said, it kind of comes out into the wash and begins to be able to be released. And we can change our minds. That is actually possible. It is possible to change our minds. So I want to say a few more things. I want to cover a few more things about working with reactivity. And one is around just this very thing of working with strong patterns of reactivity. Noticing when they're present, noticing when they're absent. But so often with strong patterns of reactivity, with kind of ones that come up over and over and over again, we, you know, there's kind of really deep grooves in the mind around it, deep ruts. And you know, anger was one of those for me. It's like, it didn't take much for me to get angry, you know. So pretty much any experience could find its way into that rut, and then I'd be angry. So, you know, it almost seems like it's always there, as you were expressing. You know, it's just like it feels like it's always there. But what I began to appreciate in my observation of these patterns is that in seeing that it's absent, it's not always there, there's the beginning of the understanding of there are things that make it come into being, make these patterns of the anger, for instance, come into being. And we see, actually, one of the great things we see is that our reactivity, our suffering, is created right here in the present moment. It's actually happening here and now, often triggered off of a thought that's coming up in our minds. Sometimes that thought is below the level of our conscious awareness initially, and then we move into the reactivity. If you did notice something, I mean, just we called up a few thoughts in the mind. How many of you actually noticed a reaction happen when you called up those thoughts? It was just a thought, right? It was just thoughts. And whew, there is reaction that happens. We did that consciously, so we knew that thought was coming into the mind, and then we could work with the feelings. But what often happens is those thoughts come kind of from our subconscious or from, you know, conditions have happened in the world. You know, we look across the room, we see somebody who looks like an ex-boyfriend, or, you know, we see somebody who looks like has a body shape of our parents, and then boom, there's a memory of our parents, like unbidden, and there's some response or reaction that happens because of the, you know, the conditioned nature of thought arising and then reaction happening to thought. So that's often the way reactivity is born, that there's a thought that happens and we don't see it, and then we're off into reactivity. In the first few months of my practice, I was really interested in exploring reactivity, primarily in my daily life. And one of the patterns that I saw arising, I had my boyfriend had and I had broken up, and one of the patterns that was arising was loneliness. Loneliness was arising every night when I went to bed. And I was curious about what was going on there. I mean, it didn't seem very strange that I was lonely getting into bed. I mean, we had broken up. It seemed kind of like a very natural response to going to bed to me. But I was curious about it. It happened every night. And so I got the opportunity to watch every night loneliness happen. And over the course of watching this night after night after night, one night I noticed very distinctly, just as I was setting my alarm clock, that's when the loneliness started. It's like, what? What does this loneliness have to do with the alarm clock? I just went to bed lonely that night and, you know, just kept watching and noticed this alarm clock phenomenon happening. And one night, I don't know how long it was after I noticed, you know, the alarm clock kind of being almost a trigger. It seemed like the alarm clock was a trigger for the loneliness. And it's like, what does that have to do with anything? One night, as I was watching my mind, curious about this phenomenon of loneliness arising with the alarm clock, while I was setting the alarm, I saw a memory arise in my mind about being with my ex-boyfriend in Disneyland. And we were looking up at a marquee where there was a digital clock. So I could see there was a connection between this memory and the alarm clock. Now, I don't know if it was I hadn't seen the memory before. I don't know if it was exactly the same memory that was happening every night. But that night I saw that there was a memory of my boyfriend arising as I set the alarm clock. And it was that memory and the feeling of, oh, that was a happy time. I'm never going to have happy times again. I'm always going to be alone. I'm never going to... That was what the loneliness was about. It actually didn't have anything to do with going to bed, which is what I thought it had to do with. So that was kind of mind-blowing for me to see that I could see in the moment just how that reactivity was created. This was within the first 3 or 4 months of beginning my mindfulness practice, just to let you know the possibility for this in our daily lives. The next night, what was more amazing to me than seeing that process happen was that the next night when I set my alarm clock, I thought of the memory, of course, it had become conscious, but the loneliness did not happen. I did not have to try to not be lonely. It just did not happen. And my understanding of that is that having seen that process unfold, the mind figured out how to let go of it. It was as if the seeing of the memory consciously decoupled the reaction to the memory. Now, I'm not saying I didn't get lonely again in my life after that, but that regular every night going to bed lonely for that period of time, that stopped. And that was a pretty amazing thing. And I had several experiences along those lines in exploring my reactivity in my daily life, in the first few months of my meditation practice. So from that too, I mean, what I've seen over and over again is that our suffering is created in the present moment. That thought arose in the present moment as a response to seeing the digital clock. That there was the clock, there was the memory, there was a reaction to the memory. It was all constructed right in the present moment. And that's one of the beautiful things, actually, about our mindfulness practice, that if we're willing to meet experience in the present moment, everything we need to know, to understand, and to allow the reactivity to begin to deconstruct itself, it's all happening right now. We don't actually have to go back and unwind all of the old clinging and frustrations and habits that were created from childhood. It's all being constructed right in this very moment, and it can be released right in this very moment. Sometimes reactivity is overwhelming. We find that it's almost impossible to turn towards a reaction with mindfulness. Anger is so strong that it swamps our ability to be mindful. Fear is so strong that we become afraid of our fear when we try to turn towards it with mindfulness. We get fearful of our fear, and it's just this kind of escalating cycle. Sometimes people talk about it like going down the rabbit hole of fear. Seems to be a familiar phrase. I hear it a lot. People say, I went down the rabbit hole. And that I think we all know what that means, you know. So if you're finding you're going down the rabbit hole of your reactivity, generally it's not so helpful to try to be mindful of that experience. In that kind of situation, what I found is it's helpful to just see if I can turn my attention to something else. It's kind of like a replacing or ignoring. It's like not suppressing the experience. This is a delicate kind of art, actually. Not suppressing the experience, of the reactivity, but also not giving it any attention. Just like, yeah, you do your thing, but I'm going to put my attention in my feet. I'm going to walk and pay attention to my feet. Or I'm going to sit and pay attention to sound. Learning ways to kind of a skillful distraction, essentially. It's helpful to distract yourself mindfully, at least in my experience, because if you try to distract yourself mindlessly, like turning on the television or something like that, you know, there's an awful lot of input there to which your mind is very likely to just pick up on and go back right into the reactivity. So, you know, mindless, when you're in a rabbit hole, mindless distraction can be dangerous. Unless you, yeah, I mean, sometimes you can find something to hook yourself to, like, you know, maybe play a game of chess or something, not trying to be mindful, but give your mind an activity. If you can be mindful of something else, just like something neutral, feet on the ground, experience of hearing, for me, that was a really helpful neutralizing experience and really allowed that, just like, yep, just not now. And actually, I would make a bargain with my reactivity. I'd say, yep, I see you. I see you're asking for attention. And this is not a good time. I will pay attention to you when my mindfulness gets stronger. And then I'd put my attention someplace else. And somehow that meeting, that kind of acknowledgement of the difficulty, it let it kind of be. You know, it was easier to let it be set aside and put my attention on something else. So that's a kind of an art form in our practice, learning how and when we need to set something aside. And it's actually not a lesser kind of practice. It's not a failure when that kind of practice happens. Actually, I found with my own experience of anger, that setting aside, I did that for a long time with my anger, probably a year or more, that my mindfulness wasn't really able to meet it. In that setting aside over and over again, it eventually just faded away. That particular anger faded away and began to be replaced with warmth and metta for the person that I was angry at. So the two really simple practices I've mentioned, you know, just this reactivity is happening and this, oh, I see you and I'm going to put my attention someplace else. Both of those simple practices proved to be extremely powerful for me. And then this exploration in the body was a slower learning. It took longer for me to learn how to do that, but also has been very powerful. So I will continue this conversation next week, talking kind of more about coming at it from a completely different direction. So hope to see some of you next week.